it's still a communal experience, and that's what people lose when saying, "Oh, movie theater is going to die." But they keep forgetting.
I haven't said that phrase. I have not said that phrase.
Oh, you've said it before, Ben.
I didn't say it today.
Hi, and welcome to the Episode of the Nation. I am Brandon Sparks.
And I'm Ben Gertz in the beautiful Portland, Oregon.
And I'm Will Clayton, joining you live from the magic city of Birmingham, Alabama.
Welcome, Will. We're glad to have you back live.
Magical city of Birmingham.
Yes, it's hotter than Satan's testicles, but we'll keep going.
It's like Tuscaloosa.
Such gender specificity for Satan, but that's fine.
What are you, do you have more intimate knowledge than I'm aware of?
Oh, dear God, I have not.
Ben, you're from here. You know this. Don't lie.
Oh, I fled there for a reason, gentlemen. I did.
Okay. Ben knows, for example, I mean, from experience, there's not much to do in Birmingham. I mean, that's a joke. That's a joke. There is. But, Ben, now you have to tell a story of when you booed the band. That's just what I'm thinking of now.
This is a horrible way to start the show, but you've goaded me. I was with Hunter Barcroft at a concert, and the musician asked, like, we were at Bottle Tree, defunct. Yeah. He was like, "Hey, Birmingham, cool town. What do you guys like to do here?" I booed. I thought it was hilarious.
Oh my God.
And literally, people around me were just like, "This guy sucks so bad."
The best thing was that no one like added anything.
Was the thing is, I thought I was going to be one of like 100 people who were like, "The zoo," or, you know, and then somebody tried
to
make it.
How long ago was this?
That's like 2 years ago or something, 3 years ago.
Birmingham's changed a lot, man.
Yeah, I know. I that's the thing is, I really don't hate the town, but I just thought, you know what's hilarious? I was a heckler. I was totally a heckler, but no one recovered. He was just like, "Wow, that." So I killed the mood, and then I just couldn't stop laughing. So
didn't someone go booze instead?
Yeah,
like,
they tried
like,
to
booze.
Turn it into booze, and it was just like, yeah. Oh man, you know, like.
All right. Anyway,
right,
this
we'll
is a terrible opening.
We'll cut that.
No. Keep going. I mean,
no.
We can cut out that middle section there, but it's still pretty funny.
That's why I moved, guys. It's because there were headhunters, like, you know, people out to get me for heckling Bottle Tree shows.
So anyway, what all have y'all been watching?
Well, if I'm being honest, I've been going back through Curb Your Enthusiasm again because I just love that show. And most recent thing in theaters I saw, I didn't write an article for it just because I didn't really feel there was much of a point in writing anymore on it, was Independence Day 2, and which was a glorious dumpster fire. A buddy of mine, we decided to go watch a bad blockbuster, and it was between Tarzan and Independence Day Resurgence, and we settled on Independence Day just to see how awful it could possibly be, and it lived up to expectations, and then more so at the ending. I don't know if you guys have seen it or not, but it was something.
I haven't seen it, and I have my roommate in L.A. He's a huge, huge Independence Day fan.
I didn't know that such people existed. Like,
oh no, I mean, he doesn't care. He'll say it. My roommate's a huge Independence Day fan, and he was like really excited for Independence Day 2. And then he texted me, and he was just like, "This is easily the worst movie I've seen in theaters." He goes, "It might be the worst. It's pretty close." He goes, "It was pretty bad."
But does Roland Emmerich have a good film? Like, I don't know of one that comes to the top of my head that I'm just like, "Oh my God, this is so good."
It's not like, "Oh my, this is a masterpiece," but I think he's made decent films. I think he's made good films. I mean, Independence Day, the first one, it's a fun movie. I'm not saying it's a masterpiece.
Oh, sure, but...
But it's a fun movie.
Yeah, and it works, like, but that's the thing. Like, we were trying to sit down and digest it, which was, like, I've never seen a movie within its own universe where the people are so stupid and don't learn from what happened in their previous film of, like, how things happen. I mean, since you haven't seen the movie, like, okay, so we've survived, it's 20 years later, right? And we've apparently taken this alien technology and combined it with ours, right? So we now have the laser beams, you know, that we can use to defend the Earth, blah, 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 blah. We've rebuilt Washington, D.C. We've rebuilt all this stuff. And Jeff Goldblum is, like, the director of Earth Space Defense. I don't remember the character name because I don't think he was actually acting. I think he was just reading his lines as Jeff Goldblum in this movie. And
I've heard his performance is amazing.
Yeah, his delivery is fantastically, like, just, I can't believe I'm doing this. I mean, Vivica A. Fox is in the movie just long enough to say she was in the movie. See, what else? I mean, so, we have this space-age technology. Okay, so, we thought we blew up all the alien ships on Earth at the end of the first movie, right? Well, it turns out we didn't. We left one ship in the middle of Africa just sit there. It apparently landed, and then the African warlords fought, like, a 10-year ground war with the aliens in the middle of Africa. And Jeff Goldblum, the director of Earth Space Defense, just left the damn thing sitting there, okay? I have questions. First, why don't we go and help the African warlords? I think they try to explain, so, oh, you know, they're so reclusive, they didn't want anyone helping out. But you're launching a 10-year ground war with aliens, so if we ended it in 96, which means they kept fighting to 2006, so 10 years later after that, what were you doing for 10 years that you're just allowing this alien ship to sit there in the middle of Africa and then after the war is over not go and, hey, I don't know, blow it up? Because as inevitably happens, what happens when an alien invasion fails and you have a piece of technology sit there? Oh, wait, it sends a distress signal. So the damn ship that Jeff Goldblum didn't blow up in the middle of Africa is the reason the aliens come back this time. But we're somehow expecting the aliens to come back because we have a moon base which has a laser beam on it, which does absolutely nothing. We have a space station somewhere off of Venus, or not Venus, on Saturn, that does absolutely nothing. We have all this cool space-age tech, but yet our space sensors and monitoring equipment is still the Hubble telescope and 1990s satellites. So, I don't know. And you see a ship that's supposed to be 3,000 miles in diameter, you don't see it coming until it's right over the moon. It lands over the entire Atlantic Ocean. Like, how do you miss the damn thing? So you
were really upset by this movie, is what
it just made
like.
No sense in its own universe context. I mean, like, Jeff Goldblum forgets why the aliens came the first time. I mean, like, literally, they have this conversation, which is, oh, there's this big hole underneath the giant alien ship in the middle of Africa that we didn't blow up. I wonder what that hole was there for. I don't know, Jeff Goldblum. Do you remember when you said in the first movie that they're coming to wipe out the existing population so they can steal all of our resources? Do you not remember this? So is it possible that they were, I don't know, drilling a hole into the Earth to steal Earth's resources? So what are they going to do when the next ship shows up? I don't know, drill a big hole in the Earth to steal our resources? I mean, it's like, how do you people forget that if this was such a massive, monumental, Earth-shattering event, why they're here? And the movie just makes no sense. Even its own universe. So, like, I can...
That's what's so strange about it, right, is that they've had so long to work on this.
Right.
Like,
yes.
What?
20 years.
What was the point
what
where they were
doing?
Like, yeah. Hey, this script is gold. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Right.
Like, they
right.
surely every person who signed off on it, and maybe Will Smith is a genius by just being like, this is a turd from the beginning. But
no,
how?
Man. I got to go make independent. I've got to go make Suicide Squad and Concussion. You know, I got to get an Oscar. So,
yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
I think you got to take into account that Will Smith had just done After Earth, and that didn't do too well.
No, but it still made money. Like, Will Smith's name still makes decent money.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's very interesting about why people say it, they point out Suicide Squad, because because he's Will Smith, he's gonna have this charisma that kind of draw people to him, but he's part of an ensemble in Suicide Squad. And he talks about, like, and I read in an interview recently that he chose that role because it was an ensemble piece, because, like, he could actually play a character finally that didn't have
right,
this,
he doesn't
like,
have to
moral
be the lead,
compass.
Right.
Yeah, and didn't have this moral compass, because everyone he's usually played...
I mean, he's pretty much been the same guy?
This, yeah, it's kind of... there's always this, like, moral compass or, like, through line that was very, like, good... at the end, but this guy's he's an anti-hero.
Right.
And he's ready to be bad. Really, that's what you're saying. He's ready to
he's
be
ready
real
to be
bad,
essentially. Yeah, yeah. It's like he's playing a guy who likes killing people.
Well, I hope it works out for him. I'm quietly hopeful about Suicide Squad. As
well, I mean, can it be worse than Independence Day Resurgence?
Yes, it can. That's called Batman versus Superman. So let's try to keep that in context.
Whoa.
A gutter bloodbath here.
Ben, what have you watched recently? This is the only segue I got.
Well, we started Joy the other night. Trying to stay alive. Let's watch.
Did you finish it?
You had the same experience I did. It's called Joy, but they should have just called it Boredom because nothing happens.
Well, you know, I think I'm trying to remember the exact description Jolene gave to it, but it was like, what did she say? Oh, it was like Synecdoche, New York, and the Apple Christmas ad smashed together, which I think is pretty apt because there's this,
that's accurate.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a strange, surreal vibe that's, I don't know. Like, I was just so curious by the choice of it that I was kind of fascinated enough at that aspect. But yeah, I was almost completely not interested in, like, what was actually happening because it was just, to me, there was just so many strange/interesting style choices that it's like, I'm going to stay here to just be glued to what seems really odd, but it was not, I mean, we haven't finished it. I'll put it that way. It didn't get its hooks into me enough to like,
I nearly fell asleep watching it.
Yeah
that
sure.
movie, I went to theaters. I actually saw it in theaters and my parents, and I'm a big Jennifer Lawrence fan. My parents are huge Jennifer Lawrence fans. And so like Joy was like the first movie in a long time that both my parents went to see with me. And I remember about 45 minutes into the movie, I thought, why was this made?
Right.
Was because it felt like it wasn't going anywhere. And I love Jennifer Lawrence. I love the actors. I love all the actors. I love Bradley Cooper. I love Robert De Niro. And I really like David O. Russell's past few films.
Yeah.
And it just felt really weird. And Ben, I know you can. One thing that really shocked me when I watched the movie, when I waited for the credits, and you'll see if you ever finish it.
I mean, yeah, I will. That's a point, yeah.
Is that there were four editors on it.
Interesting.
Four credited editors. And for me, that's like, sometimes when you see four writers, it feels like because there are so many...
I don't know what we're doing, yeah.
Yeah, it feels like because there's so many editors. Like, and one of them is Tom Cross, who edited Whiplash and won an Oscar for it, I think. And it was like, it just felt mismatched. And it felt like... The climax of the movie just didn't work for me.
It peters out. It just loses steam.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think Jennifer Lawrence did great in the movie. Like, I think she deserved an Oscar nomination, but I feel like it was a misfire for a Russell. I don't know. I mean, there's good parts to it to me, but it felt like it was aimlessly wandering in the forest in a way.
Yeah.
Didn't know where it was going.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Synecdoche, New York is like a pretty close kind of pin to drop on the map because it does just feel like this was made because of someone's, kind of idiosyncratic interpretation of what is otherwise a pretty straightforward story as far as I've seen it. You know what I mean? It's a biopic that they're trying to do X with, and I just don't really, I don't really get it.
It's a biopic. They're trying to not make a biopic,
right? And
it's like what they're trying to do.
Yeah, that's fine. But
if I remember Russell when talking about it, basically that it was mostly that because of his sort of creative fascination with Jennifer Lawrence, it just sort of spawned that way, which makes sense.
And he wanted to show like different generations of women.
Yeah.
And so you see like Jennifer Lawrence, see her mother, her grandmother, and then her daughter as well. You see all these different things. And it was very different for Lawrence because she was essentially like by the end of it she's playing a woman in her mid-40s.
Right.
Now you don't really know that because it's Jennifer Lawrence playing it, and you just can't, she's an actress that you just kind of whatever she does to me at least. Some people disagree. I'm aware of this. I feel like you just kind of, she plays a role and you just believe what she's doing, like her age or what. You don't really question it, to me at least.
I would have agreed with you with that until X-Men Apocalypse.
Okay, I agree with that. Well, X-Men, because I'll go, this is a different conversation, but X-Men Apocalypse, it's like, because I talked to someone about this recently, that's just a bland movie as well. Like, that is just, Ben, I know you haven't seen it, it's okay, you don't have to.
No, you can talk about it, yeah.
No, I mean, it's a bland movie to me. It was, the big problem, it's just a problem that I think certain superhero films will come across, is that it didn't really have a focus to it.
No, it did not.
It's like, because it had so many great actors, it felt like we had to give them all equal amount of time on screen. But because of that, it felt like we didn't give them enough. There's no pull towards any one.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, they all did decent jobs, but because of it, it's like, we had to go to Jennifer Lawrence here. We had to go to Fassbender here. We had to go to McAvoy here. We had to go follow Oscar Isaac here. You had to throw in Quicksilver really quickly to get that scene. Yeah. And because of it, it's just like, by the end of it, you kind of don't know like who it's supposed to be about.
I watched it a second time just recently, Brandon, uh-huh. And the thought occurred to me, because when I wrote the review, I didn't have this thought originally, but was, did it almost feel like a greatest hits moment of like the X-Men franchise? Like they're literally just pulling out things that people liked from the previous X-Men and just try to put it together.
I agree with that. Well, also too, because when I told Thomas after I watched it, my big note was, it felt like Bryan Singer was trying to do a direct sequel to X-Men First Class, but he didn't have Matthew Vaughn's voice.
That's an interesting thought.
And that's because I feel like, Thomas has talked about too, is that we like X-Men, but this is kind of going with the whole bring in young directors, new voices to take over a franchise or a superhero franchise. You want that new voice taking over it. But the thing is, the only franchise that hasn't done that has been X-Men, is that Bryan Singer has directed, out of the main six X-Men movies, he's directed four of the six.
Yes.
And so, like, nothing's really changed. It hasn't evolved, basically. It feels like it's just kind of like you're saying, it's the greatest hits.
Yeah.
It's like we throw Wolverine in there.
For no reason. Think about no reason whatsoever except to set up a new movie.
When you think, well, like, it works. To me, I like it. But the thing is that it's not really a major part of the story.
No, and it's a gratuitous
also,
cameo.
Too, it doesn't even make sense for the end of Days of Future Past.
Nope.
When Jennifer Lawrence takes Wolverine away, it just doesn't make sense. And it's trying to do Weapon X. I just actually read Weapon X, and it was trying to go straight from that to set up the next movie, and that's fine. But then it just didn't. I thought it was a good sequence. It was a good sequence, but not the right movie for it.
It doesn't.
It's not the right movie for it. Yeah.
Literally, that entire 15-20 minute sequence can be taken out of the movie and it could still work just fine, because the plot elements of the film they do in it can be done in about 5 seconds without that entire
sequence.
I don't disagree. And
but anyway, we can go on this all day, but I want to go to our topic.
We have a topic?
Ben, are you still there?
Yeah, I still exist.
I'm just making sure. So, just to go off what we've been watching, I've watched a few things over, because last week was 4th of July. I watched The Patriot again. So I watched me another Roland Emmerich film.
Which The Patriot would have been fine, except for the last 5 minutes. Just the tonal shift on it's just like, whoa.
The final like one-on-one battle of the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a beautifully shot film, and it was filmed.
It's a satisfying ending, though, for as, you know, hyper-violent, crazy as the movie is.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm
it,
with
it,
you.
It was,
no, I have a personal love for it, though, because I really like Mel Gibson, so that's really my real reason for still sticking with the movie later on.
Yeah, and I wish Thomas was here,
because
Thomas...
He loves all people too, Will, so that's good.
Thomas... Because they shot in South Carolina, and I wish Thomas would tell a story because I don't know much about it. But that's how Thomas got into film, because they were filming The Patriot like in his backyard or whatever, like near his house. And so he would hang out, talk to them. I'm sorry, Thomas, for telling your story, but that's what happens when you don't show up on the episode. and wow. We bring up The Patriot. I'm sorry. I'm just gonna, we love you, Thomas. We love you, Thomas.
So
but
love.
It's like, it's going with what we're saying. I'm sorry. Anyway, so... So Ben, I want you to pick which topic we want to talk about right now. This is your choice right now?
I'm going to reach into the hat of the backlog and thrill everyone here, since I think, Will, we were already kind of sparring in the pre-show a little bit about this, which is good. Here's the basic question slash thing rumbling around in my head, which is, you know, last week we talked about cable subscriptions are down significantly for every age group, you know, other than 65 plus. But yeah, we haven't seen the same decline in movie theater ticket sales.
Mm-hmm.
And why is that? And it, in particular, it's like, maybe this is just, you know, maybe I'm beating a dead horse on this a little bit, but it's just like, why, what I find curious is like, there's the four quadrants of, you know, these big blockbuster movies or whatever, theaters or studios look at these quadrants. It's like, okay, we're going to make this targeted at like the young male demo, which tends to be what a lot of these superhero movies. And maybe this, you know, way of viewing the world is a little bit antiquated, the, you know, four quadrant idea. But anyway, it's getting into what is it for that age range, right? That group, that pretty significant demo. Like, when every other young demographic group of people has basically moved to, like, all sorts of other forms of entertainment, all sorts of other technologies, like, you know, I mean, like, you could say that definitely, like, people are still watching stuff, they're just not watching it on cable, but what makes movie theaters so sticky for those people? And I guess the other thing is, like, what could come along that would change that, you know what I mean? Because if it's social, then what if there was a new, I mean, like, for example, this is a small example, but this Pokemon game that everyone's going bananas about.
Yeah.
It's seriously like random people I barely start a conversation with, they're like, are you playing Pokemon? Can we, you know, I'm like, no, I'm just too old, man. I'm sorry. But I have talked to quite a few people about it, and they're like, here in Portland, people are like running into people in the woods, like chasing Pokemon, right? So that's like eating up time that people would be doing other things. So that's kind of what I'm getting at, is like, you know, what is, I'd like to talk about like what makes that sticky for that younger group that seems more likely to maybe shift around and do other things. So I'll cede the floor now.
I will take, disagree just a little bit of your premise there that it's just about the younger demographic. Just to use your example of Pokemon Go, I know 40-year-olds at my office that are playing the thing, okay? Like, you have no idea how many people I've watched as I'm driving into the parking lot as they have their phones out stopping, look like they're taking selfies. No, they're catching Pokemon. But I think that's a slightly different outlier issue, being that it's such... I think it's the greatest viral marketing campaign ever. Because again, it's got such a pervasive imprint now on everything and everyone. You know, you've got people getting into wrecks on the interstate, people running into each other in the roads, people, what, some kids got robbed earlier, like yesterday or something. Like, I mean, like,
I saw some headline about a lady found a dead body while playing the game, basically. Locations, like,
what? Yeah,
yes, and that wasn't like clickbait. Like, that
was
actually
real.
Happened.
That was a totally real thing.
That was real.
Yeah, I didn't read it. It felt clickbaity to me.
No, she was like walking around, like trying to look for Pokemon, like at a river, and then she actually passed the body and didn't see it at first.
Wow, that's
and
dark.
Then she saw it, and she's like, "Oh wow!
Oh wow!
Oh, that's a real body." And then, like, I love the end. Like, I remember my friend sent it to me. And
wait,
like,
a minute, is there like a video? She's like recording the whole time.
No. It's just like the article about it, she's writing about it, was hysterical. And like the last line is like, she attends college here and she majors in this.
They always put that on there. Yeah, like.
And I'm just like, what is this? She sounds stupid. Like, I'm sorry.
Who cares if she's an industrial engineering major? Like, she just missed a dead body on the road.
She just missed a dead body, like, right
here.
She's
not a police detective, guys. She wasn't in that mode. She was like, you know, didn't have her nose to the ground for that particular case.
Of course not, yeah.
I read one where, like, a dude was in traffic, and, like, he just stopped. He stopped on the highway to catch Pokemon. Like, it was so funny. He's just like, man, I had to be a boss and just put my car in park and just go and catch him. Like, and he was on the highway.
Wow.
It's crazy. But anyway, we'll continue. I'm sorry.
So anyway, to go back to sort of the main topic of discussion then, I don't know, Ben, it just seems to me that and because I think we mentioned the pre-show that cable is considered such a sort of a luxury expense nowadays because we have all those streaming services now. You've got your HBO Go's if you want to watch anything HBO. You've got your Netflix, you know, with their huge revolving catalog. You've got Amazon Prime with their pretty decent catalog, and well, not just decent; it's a very good catalog. But not to disparage Amazon. But what you've got though, I think, is you're really seeing that at least folks. I could use myself for example. I don't watch a lot of terrestrial TV during live television anymore. If I do watch terrestrial TV, it's usually like Deadliest Catch or something that you don't get on streaming services or stuff like that. I love Deadliest Catch. It's the only reality TV show I like. And I don't know, something about Alaskan crab fishermen is just fascinating. But anyway, but you've got too many. You've got just a demographic shift on that in terms of the younger folks just don't see the need for cable services. Plus, you think about, you know, just general economics right now, not technically the economy is quote-unquote up in terms of the markets, but with everything else, wages store being sort of still kind of sticky and folks just trying to start out, you know, they're cutting expenses. I mean, I have a cousin who's probably in his mid-30s now, has 5 kids. He and his wife just cut out cable completely. So, yeah, we don't really watch TV much anyway. We can get all the shows we want to watch through streaming service. But the difference being why it wouldn't hit movie theaters, in my mind, are really two things. Number one, we are still, even though prices have gone up, the movie theaters are still the poor man's entertainment. We are still fairly cheap in terms of just buying a ticket and going in, watching it, and watching something. And I think in terms of a demographic issue, I do believe you see a lot where if it's a movie that has either been really well reviewed or something you really want to go see, you don't care about throwing down $10-$15 for a ticket to go watch that movie on the big screen with the movie theater sound. If it's something you're semi-interested in, if you're thinking, ah, I don't really want to see it, doesn't sound that great, I'll Redbox it later. That's usually what I hear a lot. And, of course, with family-friendly TV and, family-friendly movies are still dominating the market, I think you're never going to see a real drop in movie theater attendance until we just really just do something stupidly ungodly and price people out at like $20 a pop for a ticket.
Well, I mean, if it's 3D or if it's IMAX, you're already getting that much. But I mean, with before that, if it's just a regular ticket, I mean, in LA, a regular like nighttime ticket for an adult can be like $13-$14 bucks. But no, I think the big thing of why it hasn't gone down is this, the whole the main topic. I mean, the main thing I always bring up is it's communal experience. So, like, for example, it's like with the certain, and like we're talking about going with friends and everything. I know from like many times where like I went to a movie by myself, I had friends that were upset that they went to the movie without me, or I went to the movie without them. I have a friend Logan who listens to the show. And he went to go see The Nice Guys without me. Thomas saw The Nice Guys without me. I have yet to see The Nice Guys because everyone I wanted to go with already went to it. So it was so because they already went to it, all went to The Nice Guys, I haven't seen it yet. And I probably won't see it until it comes out on DVD. And so I feel like that's one thing people want is they want to watch it with their friends. They want to go watch Star Wars Force Awakens with their 7 or 8 friends or whatever. Like For example, I traveled to Atlanta to go watch it with like 8 of my college friends because I wanted to see it with them. And I feel like that's one reason why movies continue to do well is because it's that communal experience. It's like that's why now, even with TV, you have viewing parties like for Game of Thrones or Breaking Bad when it ended. You want to watch it with other people.
Yeah.
And well, some of us have viewing parties, and some of us don't watch Game of Thrones until they go to a viewing party and get a cast member around and show up. So, I mean,
this is going to get brought up every damn episode.
You did specifically basically name drop, but
come on.
No, I completely agree with what we've said previously, which is like the spectacle of big films, Star Wars, like those will continue unless somebody just totally destroys the franchise. Like those will sell. People will go see Independence Day 2, even though it gets bad reviews, because it's this huge spectacle.
Yeah.
But here's what I'm kind of diving back into is from my own life, right?
Yeah.
I remember in high school, and less in college, much less in college, but in high school, we would go see a movie and just kind of like wander like almost at least once a week, right? And it really wasn't about
What do you mean by wander? Do you like wander the theater?
I mean, well, yeah, it became, well, not in a like jumping theaters sort of thing. It's more like wander as in, hey, let's go see a movie. You would go and maybe one starts, because this is like pre-smartphone, which, I'm an old man, but basically you would say, let's go see a movie. You would go to the multiplex, the theater, and just see what's playing soonish and buy a ticket for the soonest movie.
You guys are the bane of my existence when I worked at the movie theater, the Wanderers. just hanging around for two or four hours at a time.
I'm telling you, we bought like, you know, a ticket a week, basically, right? And that's what I'm getting at is
a ticket a week for a 4-hour experience.
Yeah, well, look, you're coming out.
Hallways, littering shit all over the floor.
We would go outside for our.
I love how you're a movie theater person who's like, I don't want you people to show up in my movie theater.
No,
like,
I want people to show up at the movie theater. I just want them to, you know, pay for your movie, watch your ticket, and then please clean up after yourself. You know,
you're the nice Baptist lady that was like, hey, just so you know, we start at 9. Right, it's like, we're glad you're here and all, but like, could you at least be like on time about it and like, you know, do it the way we want to do it. Anyway, yeah, so going back on like when I was in that demo, more specifically of like young male, right? It was mostly social, and it was mostly just a chance to like escape the house and spend time with friends, right? There's a way of thinking of it as basically like a job to be done, as sort of like a business lingo speak, right? Of like, that was for me, it wasn't necessarily like the entertainment or the specific movie as much as the job to be done was to, you know, have time with friends for a pretty cheap price, right? And like a cable subscription didn't even factor in because I didn't pay the bills. You know what I mean?
You were young.
And it wasn't like we were going to go home and watch something anyway, because the whole point was to be away from parents, because we were like wild and crazy / all we want to do is just talk and be like weird high schoolers.
Do you pay for cable now? Do you have a cable subscription?
No, he does not.
I don't. No. I appreciate Brandon knowing that faster than me.
Brandon,
but yeah,
do you have a cable subscription?
I do. I do have a cable subscription. I can tell say from experience, because my parents also have cable, and when I got back home to Alabama, my mom was like complaining about how Comcast, I'm throwing it under the bus, Comcast, they're gonna listen to the show.
You're like Tarantino picking on like the most obvious villain ever, and people are like, no.
So Comcast, I mean, it's for example with them, it's like we had a bunch of like cable boxes in our house. At one point we had like one in every room when it was a lot cheaper.
And only one of them works.
And so now it's like I get home and I notice like three boxes are gone. And like, oh, because we took them away because they were charging us more for the box.
Yes.
Well, then they're like, now, since we've taken those boxes away, they've added all these other extra like subscription charges that like don't even have to do with what they're watching or what they like, what the stuff they get. It's like they cut off like certain sports channels like NBA TV, because I used to watch that growing up, and like they took away these boxes, and by 3 months later they're paying the same amount they were paying 3 months before with less. So that's one reason why I think, say, younger people aren't doing this, because it's getting too expensive. They're tacking on these extra fees.
I agree. I think they're when you ask Comcast or when you hear what they have to say, it's like, well, content fees have gone up because of channel carrier fees. That's not our fault. Blah 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 blah. We try to negotiate, and then when there's a blackout, people go crazy. But yeah, I agree. Like, cable has gone up way faster than the cost of most things. But I mean, movie tickets have gone up. You know, I remember going as as a high schooler. Yeah. I think we were paying, you know, $5, $6, $7.
$6 is what was the discount ticket price when I first started the movie theater when I was a sophomore.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays, depending on where you're at, like a matinee is close to $10 nowadays. I mean,
talking about within like 10 to 15 years, it's doubled. Right, I mean, that's
not even that. I mean, it was when I was in high school, so you're looking at 6 years ago. I mean, it was $7.50 for a matinee ticket in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And within that amount of time, it's jumped up to probably about $9.50 or $10 now.
Yeah, so okay, it's not double, but I mean, you know, like I'm comparing it to when I was buying tickets, but yeah, so it's gone up faster than inflation, right? I mean,
yeah,
it's also going up fast. Anyway, I mean, maybe this doesn't lead anywhere, but to me, it's like, well, so here's what I'm curious about is like, if I was trying to like I feel like there's probably something that could come along. Because these people haven't necessarily formed habits, right? Like I said, in high school for us, there became a habit where we just went to the theater and just got a ticket because they're, what else are you going to do? You know, small town.
It's still a thing.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's still a thing.
Yeah, but what are some of those things that could come along next? For example, like The Verge had a whole long article about the return or the rise of arcades because the cost of VR is so expensive, people aren't going to likely own it themselves at first. It'll return.
A VR arcade.
Yeah, there'll be arcades. Yeah. It'll be at amusement parks and Six Flags doing all this stuff where you can ride a roller coaster and be in VR at the same time and watch Superman, you know, just fly in front of your roller coaster for some weird reason. But, you know, like, if I was back in Tuscaloosa and I was in high school and a place opened up where you could do VR, I can tell you where I would be. Like, I would be at a VR arcade. You know what I mean? So the question is, like, is there something, you know, is it an app? Is it VR? Does it matter what it is? But, like, I guess I'm getting at, like, how deep are these hooks that are in people? And do you guys care debating this point at all, I guess?
Are you talking about the return of monoculture? Is that what you're looking for?
What do you mean, a monoculture?
Well, that there is a general, grand, overall cultural synthesis in the United States of this is what people do, this is what we all like. Just look at television a day. You know what a good night on TV is getting, what, 3 to 6 million viewers, you know? That's a great night on television. Yeah. You know, 70s, it was, you got 15 to 16 million on a regular basis. Monoculture, whereas today we are much more... There's too much.
Right.
There's literally so much out there. It's almost impossible to all be on the same page for what we're all watching. And really, to answer your point on that, some stuff I've been reading recently, some books and articles, just talking about sort of the fractious and fractured nature of the United States, both politically and culturally, is that we are actually. It's really pretty much impossible to try to recreate a monoculture in the modern world, and to try to do so is in many ways fighting a losing battle because we wax nostalgically about mid-century America, and trying to recapture that in many ways is what prevents us from using our own fractured nature and our own sort of new cultural subsets to their best effect. So this is why you look at what we call sort of the nerds have taken over pop culture, we're making all these superhero movies and things like that for specific people. And the name of the book, by the way, it's called The Fractured Republic by Yuval Levin. It came out just this year, I believe. Fantastic little political treatise if you're interested.
Yeah, no, that sounds super interesting. But, and that, yeah, I mean, I agree with you that it seems clear that, like, people are subdividing up into their interest, and the nerds are no longer outcasts. They're just nerds off in the corner, and you have...
Our natural predators are gone.
Yes.
The jocks are just...
No more bullying in schools. The jocks think superheroes are cool, too. And, you know, we've just taken over, and we don't know how to duck our heads anymore and duck and roll and keep our head down.
This is a very different topic, but I mean you'd be surprised still, like, as young kids, that's still kind of that whole attack against, I guess, nerd culture is still kind of there, sadly.
Oh, sure, but you have to get, like, really far into it now, right? Like, think about what's the most popular sitcom on TV today?
I mean, yeah, you're looking at Big Bang Theory.
Big Bang Theory. I mean, and I get into debates with some of my nerdy friends about this all the time, which is, do you like or do you dislike Big Bang Theory, and why? Mm-hmm. And the people that generally dislike Big Bang Theory is because they believe that they are being made fun of, as opposed to celebrating, you know, what it is they're doing. And they believe that they miss out that the humor is actually on – it's Penny's commentary on the ridiculousness of Sheldon Cooper, right? That's where the true comedy is. It's the social aspect. It's not that they enjoy video games and comic books. It's that they don't know sometimes that they're being a little ridiculous.
They're not laughing with us. They're laughing at us. Is basically what's happening. Is what how people feel.
Right.
And yeah, but it's still there. But yeah, I think going because you're I feel like film or going to the movies has become very ingrained in our culture, and right. I think that's why it still continues to happen because you're getting out of the house. Like I go back to something. It's an event, no matter where you're going to. I know Ben back in his day when he probably went to the movie.
Back in my day,
went to the movies, and if he was in Tuscaloosa, he probably went to Fox 12in Tuscaloosa.
And I also went to the Bama Sucks.
Six. Well, see, so with all the for Fox 12, for example, it's in a mall, and this is going with a whole different thing. The fall of mall culture within America, is that back then you'd go to the mall, you'd go get something to eat, you hang out with your friends, you go to the arcade, and then you hit up the movie theater. Like, you'd see what's playing. That's when you can really walk around.
It was a full evening. It really was just kind of like, hey, we have a car.
Yeah.
We can't really get too crazy, but we can go to the mall.
Yeah.
You know, and go see a movie.
and that's
real.
Yeah. And that's kind of within, like, in Tuscaloosa now, like, it's a multiplex off by itself. It's not connected to anything. So it's still, with some of my friends, it's still become an event that we go get dinner kind of nearby and then go to a movie. But back then, when Ben was younger...
You go to Zaxby's, Brandon. That's exactly where you go.
I go to Zaxby's, yeah.
That's where I go.
Why would you go to Zaxby's when you have Hooters just right
there? Oh, man. Anyway, when I went to Fox 12...
It's geographically accurate, Will.
In Fox 12 in Tuscaloosa. So you'd go get lunch for like a matinee. You go play go in the arcade before the movie starts, and then you go over and you watch the movie with your three friends that your mom brought you there. When it was Ben, he got to drive, but he's older than me.
I do remember where there a time when we would get dropped off, but I mean.
It was an event. It was a communal thing, and it's still a communal thing. That's why I think it's so ingrained in our culture is that we have to go to the movie. This movie's coming out, and even like for example with me, like I was saying I go to movies with certain friends. It could be a bad movie. Like for example, my other roommate Nathaniel and me, we went to see Fantastic Four with another friend of ours. The most recent Fantastic Four adaptation.
Yes, the one that you can't actually pronounce the title.
We went to that, and we knew going into it was going to be a bad movie. Like, we were aware, and we just really wanted to see how bad it was. And we couldn't go alone, so we needed to go together to watch it, because we wanted to enjoy this experience together. And it was the most painful experience I've ever had in a movie theater. I mean, I would not have gone to see Fantastic Four by myself.
Right, you hate watched it with a friend, and that's because
that's,
the goal was social. Like the goal was to be with someone else, and you needed something to do.
Yeah, and I still see movies like alone. I know that sounds sad, but I do go to movies alone a lot.
No,
of
it's
times.
A good experience.
It is. It's a very different experience.
I would say that's my like prime. Like that is my preference.
I mean, a lot of times, in all honesty, if I could like go to a movie theater and like no one's there. Like, maybe two people, I'd be cool. I don't care. But I want to see it on a big screen.
It's the greatest thing on the planet to be, like, one of four people.
Yeah, it just depends on what you're going to see. Like, if it's Star Wars, like, opening night of Star Wars, you don't want to see that alone. You want to see it with other people. Even if it's the opening night of, like, Jurassic World, or even, in all honesty, Batman vs. Superman. Like, you want to be around people.
I did not. I wanted to yell at the screen, but...
Well, I know, but it's like, you still... It's still a communal experience, and that's what people lose when saying, movie theater's going to die. But they keep forgetting.
I haven't said that phrase. I have not said that phrase.
Oh, you've said it before, Ben.
I've been around, but I
didn't say it today. You told me
not
to
say
it today.
Oh, it's all about context.
He phrased a question that was like, so you're saying that you don't know why movie theaters aren't dead yet?
No.
He goes, that's not what I'm saying.
I'm asking, let me put it to you this way.
Yes.
If there was another space that was like this communal entertainment, whatever, right?
Theater, yes. You have theater.
Yes.
No, I know that we have a theater, and maybe that's how it will be for a very long time, because you can get such high volumes of people in on a Friday night and on a Saturday and a Sunday and whatever, and maybe the arcades will not really come back. I don't know, but I don't know. I'm throwing out a speculative question of what would it take, or what might be a thing. Because here's an example. Just a random example of, like, you know, when we, because, okay, 14, I would say that the age for a lot of these patterns to get set of, like, this is what we do on a Friday night, are probably like 14, 15, 16, 17 years old, right? I mean, that's like, you have your friend group, let's all hang out. And, you know, is it another app that comes out that basically lets you all watch movies together on your iPad and you can video chat or something? I don't know. I don't know. I wouldn't do that.
I couldn't do that. We could do that.
But I don't do Snapchat. I tried it. I think it's stupid. I think it's so dumb. But I'm old.
Ben, you're married. Of course you're going to think it's stupid.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. That is a key component of it. I understand the use case for it, and I don't fit into that use case. So I do get that, definitely. But
I love how Ben was on Snapchat at one point, and the thing is, he never sent pictures. He just sent text through Snapchat. That's all he would do. That was all he would do.
The Snapchat, Ben.
I know. I tell you, the moment I quit, and I told this to James's face the other day when he was here in Portland. James sent me a picture. No reason. I just got an alert on my phone, and it said Snapchat from James. I opened it up, and it's a picture through a windshield of in a rainy car. Of a fire truck, like a block away, and he just wrote on it, fire truck. And that, for me, was like, why? This interrupted my day. And it's literally just a random, like, squirrel.
Yes, you have hit onto what Snapchat is.
Yeah.
Now I know that, and as soon as I zeroed in on that fact, I deleted it. I think I deleted it in that.
This,
like,
is pointless.
I think it was either that moment or that day for sure. Because I was like, why? And I don't even think he responded. It was like, it was so small a squirrel moment for him. It just didn't even matter to have a conversation about it. He was just like, fire truck. Anyway.
Was the fire truck on fire? Is that better?
No. It was like blurry and barely visible in the image.
Okay, continue, Ben. Continue with the.
No,
with
all I'm
other...
getting at is, like, I think Snapchat's stupid. You guys just thought that my example of, like, what if you could watch movies on your iPad and your friends could all video chat with you? You guys thought that was stupid. But
yeah, I think it's stupid. I just don't think it would work.
I wouldn't do it. Yeah, I mean,
right. I wouldn't do it. You wouldn't do it. But I'm just saying, like, what are some of those possibilities? I'm fighting with the wrong people. I feel like I want to go ask 12-year-olds, like, what do you want to do more than go watch a movie? I don't know. To me, it's just curious to think about.
And this goes back to early in our existence of this podcast, when we did the whole new wave of a future of storytelling. And who was the guy that you loved that teaches at USC? I don't know if you remember his name. Suspenders.
Wait a minute. What, you just threw everything off in my mind. What are you talking about? The guy with suspenders. Oh, the, gosh, wow. Okay, hold on. Processing, loading.
Is it Henry something? For some reason, I'm thinking like Henry. But anyway, he once said, in this thing that I went to at the Academy Theater or whatever in LA, and he was this professor at USC talked about how you can't kill a medium. It can only evolve. And I feel that's movie theaters. I feel like the content is becoming different on TV. Like it's becoming more cinematic. But I don't feel you can, the way movies are now, I don't think you can get rid of that and almost downgrade in, like, experience and size, if that makes sense. I feel like you can't really take away from that. I feel like you'll only just get bigger screens, or what, you'll get a new experience. If you'll get, like we talked about, you'll get like an orchestra in LA at Hollywood Bowl and you're watching Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, or you're watching Back to the Future, you're getting a new experience. I don't think you can really downgrade it to where you take away movies and it's just on an iPad and the video chat with your friends.
Yeah. And I want to clarify, I'm not saying that they'll die.
No.
It's just a question of more of the key that started it all is why the decline in one medium
and not another.
Cable TV and not the other. And maybe the comparison is in some ways false in that we're comparing subscriptions and really viewing hours are pretty consistent and if not up. So maybe it's just a shift to another form within the medium, and so it's not in any sort of danger. I don't know.
And it's very similar to the argument that when television came around was that people were like, well, TV's going to kill film. And, like, people are not going to want to go to the theaters.
Everyone will have a television in their homes. You know, people won't want to go out to watch movies.
Yeah, they won't want to do it. But again, is that you realize that the movies are an escape for a lot of people. Is that you're going into a dark room to watch a movie. And that might be, like, this naive, like, sense that I or like view of that I have it because I'm a filmmaker, but I still think subconsciously people do that, like they feel that way about it, like and also too you have to realize that you have to think about the culture, the like where movies are at, and by that I mean when you're in a big town like LA or New York or Atlanta or even Portland, you have more things to do. But if you go to a small town in the Midwest or a small town in the South, there's not much you can really go and do. And movies have become a part of, like, it's like in some places of the country and even the world, it's still like Ben's childhood and high school years, is that you go to the movie to go hang out, or you go to the mall to go hang out at the movie. It's still like that in certain parts of the country. It's just not everywhere. So
let
I
me
feel,
go back to those golden days, right?
Golden day. You're gonna move to Kansas, and and
those halcyon days of yours.
I've never been to Kansas, so I'm sorry if it's not like this.
I have. It's lovely.
And it was Henry Jenkins. Is that his name?
Henry Jenkins. I found the video, and yeah, he basically. And I think you're right. It's not that it'll die. It's basically that these mediums
they evolve,
live on. They evolve and they shrink, in large part. You know, but they.
To some extent, I'll give an example, and because Thomas and I have been talking about it through the text. If you or Hunter have read it, Ben, we were talking about Hamilton, the musical that's on Broadway.
Yeah,
and theater's been around a lot longer than movies, but theater has found a way to evolve in some way. Like the content that they're creating has found a way to evolve, and they've been doing it for thousands of years. And if they can still release something like Hamilton or this year's Spring Awakening, when it was like half the cast was mostly people who were hearing impaired, and they find new ways to create and to tell stories. And I feel that film will do that as well. I mean, like Hamilton, like it was Lin-Manuel Miranda's last show, and tickets were going up to $20,000 to go watch his last show. I mean, and that's not saying theater is dying. That's saying theater is evolving in a new way. And I feel like movies will find a way at some point to do that as well.
Yeah, and I think... go ahead, Will. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Ben. I do think it needs to be said, though, Brandon, I don't think it's the best comparison in the world, because when you're really talking about theater in and of itself, that the creative impulse of theater doesn't translate, I think, into what Ben's trying to talk about when it comes to business practice and communal activity. Mm-hmm. That theater, regardless of whether it has huge numbers for various shows, will always sort of be a thing because of the collective storytelling and mythology that we create and that we need as human beings to function.
Yeah.
We need storytelling. We need that outlet. And so I'm not sure theater is the best comparison. I get what you're saying, though. Like, I agree that we do see lots of the new things happen with theater, but that's just to me just the expression of the human creative sort of genius.
Well, I think mediums tend to evolve, and also the thing too about that is to the other side of this with theater is that a lot of it, especially Broadway, I think as Thomas once said in the text, it's become this classist type thing. And it's
which is silly. It's very, very silly. I mean, like let me ask you this. Yeah. I don't mean to cut off, but do you guys like opera?
I've been to one.
You've been to an opera. Ben, have you been to
an opera? I've been to one, yeah.
And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed
it. I think I've been to two. That's how impactful it was in my life.
Would you say that opera is a creative form for every person?
No.
No.
Why?
I mean, are you saying the people who create it? I feel like not everything fits with everyone, if that makes sense.
Look. Okay, but what I mean is opera created just for a specific group of people, or is it created and then only certain people enjoy it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that it's, you know, consumed and enjoyed by a very, very, very small portion of the population.
Yes.
Right. But this is my point. That's actually the exact opposite of what opera was created to be.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Looking at the history of opera, it was basically sort of your movie theaters of the day.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Because it's a complete art form. It's music, it's singing, it's dancing, it's acting, mm-hmm. it's set design, everything, direction, everything that you wanted. That's why it's called the complete art form, mm-hmm. that we've created basically in the last, really, about 200 years or so, this idea that opera is for hoity-toity, snooty people that want to be lorded over. I went to the opera this evening, unlike you peasants that stayed home to watch the football game. Mm-hmm. Like, think about Fraser Crane, you know, and the whole jokes of them going to the opera and Marty hating the opera.
Yeah,
it's a very recent thing.
I think that's a great example, though, of kind of, by analogy, what I'm kind of getting at in a way, which is that, it was created originally for everybody, just like film in a lot of ways. But because of economic pressures on opera, because you have to stuff a room full of actors into a decent sized room full of people, like, it's going to become expensive. You know what I mean? Compared to film.
Yes.
And so now it is this hoity-toity thing, and it was those economic pressures that changed the medium as we perceive it now, like among our, like, everyone living, basically. You know what I mean? It was a slow evolution, but now the common perception, like you said, is that it's just this elitist thing. I don't know. I think if I was arguing against myself, which is maybe a horrible... Why did I even bring this up if I'm going to bring a counterpoint? But
good. That's a good argument if you understand where your own weaknesses are.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think by analogy, it's almost like if I said, like, well, radio is dying. Well, the obvious counterpunch to that is no, podcasts are thriving, right? So the medium and the like you said, Will, of the need to tell stories and all of that. I mean, I've started listening to so many great podcasts just like in the past week or two. Mm-hmm. That are in rare form, you know, just like great.
Throw out some names. Who are you listening to?
I just started one, actually in kind of the wrong order, but it's a new series, like a one-off series from it's NPR, so this makes me very Portland, but it's called The Uncertain Hour from Marketplace. So they do, Kai Ryssdal, Marketplace, ring any bells? Mm-hmm. Anybody?
No. I don't think so, unfortunately.
Anyway, I my dad always listened to Marketplace when I was a kid in the car. He would turn it on and pick me up. Uh-huh. We'd listen to Marketplace. But anyway, it's basically like a documentary podcast about big economic issues that we all fight about but don't really understand. And so the first season is about welfare. And it's fascinating. It is like, this is what I want. This is what I want. When I turn on the radio dial, that's what I want. But I don't have to anymore because the medium has evolved.
Yeah.
And now, like, you guys don't know who Kai Ryssdal is, but, like, I've heard of people who, like, want to have his poster in their room. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, he's, like, a subset of people love the shows, and it's very cool that they, you know, it's a spinoff. You know, and that's, I don't know. So, anyway,
podcast with radio is a good example because radio itself is changing. I mean, it's the radio of the 40s and 30s when you gather around and listen to radio, like you watch TV or you go to a movie or watch TV. That's evolved in the podcast with doing storytelling and
you wouldn't want to be a DJ right now. Right?
No.
Like, you would not want to be like, I want to go to college and become a DJ, right? Because
I'm sorry for all those DJs out there.
Well, like a disc jockey at a radio station, right? Like from the 70s whatever. Like, that just isn't really a thing anymore. I mean, there are very, very few people like that.
That have some sort of, like, credibility, or not credibility, but have some sort of fame. Like, back in the day, like, you'd have things like Casey Kasem or whoever.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And now, things you don't really have that.
Right, and Yeah, so...
Does anyone do a Casey Kasem impersonation?
I'm okay.
I also will pass, but...
Clearly, the cultural imprint of radio is so strong that we refuse to do the famous voices of radio.
Hi, this is Casey K. I can't, I mean, like, I've never done it before, so never mind. Just continue. Do something else.
Oh, my gosh. I think it was the Variety, what is it, the Vanity Fair, maybe, that does the roundtable with comedians every year. Do you guys see this?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They did
It's Hollywood Reporter, right?
Hollywood Reporter, yeah. They did a roundtable with all the, like, hottest, you know, comedic actors, like Fred Armiston and all these different guys, right? Ricky Gervais was on the roundtable, and the reporter was like, the interviewer was like, okay, impressions, go. And she started pointing at people and making them try to do voices, and these are like the best of the best, and most of them were
That's
just
fantastic.
Like, no, I don't, you know, like, they had very few just like ready-made,
anyway. Yeah, but it's like I have a few, but like Casey Kasem is not in my wheelhouse, like, that's...
I think it was like, Gervais that basically just took everyone, every prompt he was given, and he was like, okay, here we go.
He intentionally does bad impressions. That's,
right.
That's his thing.
Right.
Like, yeah.
So anyway, back to our topic. Back to our topic.
This might be a sign that we're spiraling out of control, gentlemen.
Yeah. So what we've come to learn is that media, like we said earlier in one of our early episodes of Future of Storytelling.
Don't hype our back catalog too much, Brandon. We want people to watch the new stuff, okay?
Well, we're creating a new conversation with the back catalog. You know, right. it's like history. Like when you're doing a research paper, you take the old stuff to make a new topic. That's how it goes, Ben.
Are you explaining to me how research works?
Did you tell the history major on this podcast that you recycle material?
You recycle the material to prove your point. To create a new voice. That's what it is.
T-5 minutes.
Disagree, but okay.
I'm sorry. That's what I have right now. I'm in a room. Somewhere alone. We're going on for an hour.
All right. You're basically, this is a cry for help. All right.
This is a cry for help. So
guys,
anyway,
follow us on Facebook.
No. So recommendations.
Like us on Facebook, right?
Recommendations.
Okay.
Ben, you go first.
Oh, jeez. Okay, here's the only thing I'm counting down entertainment-wise. I'm counting down the release of No Man's Sky, which is a video game.
Yeah.
18 quintillion planets is the like catch buzzy thing that everybody's talking about, but it's basically a procedurally generated universe that no one,
infinite in size.
Yeah, no one knows what we're going to do, but basically if every human played it for their entire lifetime, we would only play a small fraction of the game. I'm thrilled. It's like 3 weeks away, 4 weeks away. I pre-ordered it and I'm just sitting, waiting.
Are you doing it at a PC or?
Well,
or,
you caught me. You caught me here. I'm very on the fence about this. I'm like genuinely unsure. I have a PS3 for random, not great reasons. I just have one, and I'm really thinking about getting a PS4 because it's so quick and easy. You just go to, you know, a store and drop it in and let's play it. But I was also pricing out building my own PC, which just feels very nerdy, and I don't know.
It's not nerdy at all.
I know. I used
it's
to build them in high school, but I don't know. I'm on the fence. I priced it out. It was going to be like $650 to get it revved out with Windows and everything I needed. And I don't know. I don't think I'm going to pull the trigger. I'm going to decide. I'm going to let my background processing units.
Conscience be your guide.
Well, I'm going to sleep on it and let my subconscious chew on it. And if I wake up and just, you know, I'll let you know.
So Will, recommendations?
Ooh, I actually wasn't ready for this. But I've really been going back and, I already mentioned going through Curb Your Enthusiasm again, but there's actually a new show or miniseries on HBO that's quite interesting to me, The Night Of. Have you guys seen any of this yet?
I've heard buzz about it, but I haven't seen it.
I haven't, no.
It's pretty good, like, at least from what I've seen thus far. It looks really interesting. I'm curious to see where they go with it. But I would take a look at that. And obviously, if you're not caught up with Game of Thrones, what's going on with your life? Get caught up.
See, Brandon accepted that shame, and I just—it's like water off a duck's back at this point. I'm not gonna watch it. It's just game over on Game of Thrones.
I'm gonna watch it. It's just gonna be a while.
You tell me what happens with the dragons at the end of the whole finale, like, because I'm not going to get burned like Lost, people. I'm not going to watch a whole show and just get screwed by the finale.
Burned dragons, get it?
All right, so, guys, like us on Facebook. Brandon, what are you...
Yeah, let me recommend Ben. What the hell, Ben? Is this your... gosh. So anyway, I'm going to recommend a podcast.
Ooh.
Because a friend recommended me this podcast. And it's Anna Faris is Unqualified. And it's Anna Faris, if you guys don't know, from Mom. And she's in Scary Movie, and she's Chris Pratt's wife. But my friend Jamie, she recommended it for me because there was a great interview. It's a two-part interview with James Gunn, director of Guardians of the Galaxy. And yes, it's a really great two-part interview with him. It's very personal and very kind of in-depth with his career and also just personal life. Like it's probably like a two-hour interview if you put it together. So, Ben, you can listen to it, one on your way to work and then one on your way back from work.
Yeah.
But that it's great. And she's just kind of started up. I haven't listened to all the episodes. But it's interesting hearing like a famous celebrity person talking with other celebrities, but kind of not in a way that's like, oh, I love everything you do. Let's talk. Let's like push you up. And that's the only questions we ask. Like, you know how I listen to certain podcasts where it's like a director interviewing a director. And it's like, so, oh, I love your work. Oh, I love your work. And you're asking no difficult questions. And Anna Faris is doing some, I think, very personal stuff on that show, at least with the James Gunn interviews. So, yeah, that's my recommendation. So make sure you follow us on Facebook or like us on Facebook.
Like us on Facebook, Brandon.
Gosh. Follow us on Twitter at Cinenation Show. Make sure you follow us on Medium, and if you want to write for us on Medium, just join Medium and send us anything you write about movies, television, entertainment, any kind. We'll look at it. We'll read it.
And write something good, people. We do have standards. We have.
Yeah, I mean, write something good. I mean, or be like Ben. Don't write anything. I mean,
it's
whatever.
I've written things. I have words.
Oh gosh, the last thing I wrote was
like us. Did we already talk about Twitter?
Yes, we did.
All right. Review us on iTunes.
Yes.
Tweet about us. Argue with me or any of us on the show.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. It's shocking that we have as many listeners as we do, but we appreciate all of you. I love you.
Thank you. We hope you enjoy this tangent episode of Cinenation. Thank you very much. Will, thank you for coming on.
Absolutely.
Loved
it, Will.
Ben, thanks for showing up again.
thanks for having me back, Brandon.
The way you say that, Brandon, is, and so Will, thank you for being here, and Brandon, Ben, you were here.
Good. Hey, if Ben shows up, I have a good day. That's it.
Hey, you're guys, welcome. I love it. Ben. Let's do it again.
All right, guys. All right, thank you, guys. All listen to more episodes. Good. Bye.